So today we're going to talk about the related topics of Zionism and Aliyah in Rav Lichtenstein's thought. These, of course, are hotly debated issues over the past century and a bit. We're going to focus a little bit more on what there's a bit more of a record on, which is about Aliyah more than about theoretical issues in Zionism, but we will end up touching on some of those as well. We're going to, I guess, start more from the practical and move towards the theoretical. So start with Rav Lichtenstein's own family and you know their Aliyah, talk about his views on Aliyah in general, and then abstract and move to the level of questions of state, religion, and state, which tie in deep ways to the Zionist project as well. So one thing that people often talk about, especially at this institution, is what would have happened if Rav Lichtenstein had stayed in America. Right? He was the Rav's son-in-law. He was a leading Talmud scholar. He was also a professor. He was the, as we've discussed, the paradigm or one of the paradigms of paradigmatic figures of integrating Torah and Mada. And he left in 1971, and the Rav's influence waned. Definitely by the time he got to the 80s, by the mid-80s, he was no longer teaching. And you might say there's no paradigmatic Torah Mada figure in the same way who took over. So that's always a question people ask. And the implication is that by making Aliyah, Rav Lichtenstein sort of shifted the trajectory, at least of YU, if not of modern Orthodoxy. So a few months ago, actually just about a year ago now, a colleague of mine, Zev Elif, wrote an article entitled "What If Rav Aharon Had Stayed," which is a counter history. Tried to like do a theoretical analysis of what YU would have looked like. A lot of speculation there. Maybe the most exciting part was that Tova Lichtenstein had a searing rebuttal to his article, and along the way, one of the things she mentioned, aside from a variety of other corrections and disputes she had, but she does talk about why they made Aliyah and what that meant to them as a family. So yeah, the first source here has some quotes from that article. So she says, "Neither he nor I were sorry we could not travel both roads," playing off of Robert Frost's poem. They were happy to move, and the move is more than just the importance of moving to Israel to form a viable spiritual community, because indeed you can have viable spiritual communities in many places. And it was more than a Zionist dream in some lofty sense. It was something much more essential and basic. Eretz Yisrael was the place to be. It was intertwined and essential to Rav Aharon's being. He couldn't imagine himself living anywhere other than Israel, and that's why they moved. So I think that's an important point to hear from Tova Lichtenstein, Rav Aharon's wife, and you'll hear echoes of it in the piece on why to make Aliyah as well. In passing, she mentioned some other things that we're going to see a bit later in the semester about how Rav Aharon took stands on various issues: the bombing of Beirut, Sabra and Shatila massacre, conscientious objections of soldiers, the whole Baruch Goldstein story, relationship to secular Jews. All these things Rav Aharon weighed in on that related to Israeli society. Primarily, he was very active, and we're going to see how that played itself out in various ways. Then Tova also makes the strong claim, Dr. Lichtenstein makes the strong claim that Rav Aharon's influence on the American Orthodox community, call it centrist or modern, was because he moved to Israel. That in a sense, in her opinion, he had greater reach precisely because he moved to Israel. He wasn't associated particularly with YU, with a certain idea towards education, rather one towards building the state, a Torah and army service, yeshiva, which is maybe broader in certain senses. The set of values are a bit broader, and maybe he was able to reach more people. I think the jury's out on that. I'm not sure. You could definitely quibble with that, but it's an interesting way of thinking about how Rav Aharon framed himself in terms of being at the Gush rather than being at YU. But I think for our purposes, the primary significance of this is what it tells us about the Aliyah, that it's something so essential to be in Israel. You can't really attribute it, oh, it's a strong community, oh, it's a Zionist dream. That those are insufficient to describe it. If we now turn to Rav Aharon's own words, he has an article in the Orthodox Forum on the topic of religious Zionism post-disengagement, future directions, which, as you can guess, was convened after the disengagement, and published a couple years after that. So he has an article, Diaspora Religious Zionism, Some Current Reflections, where he talks about a few different things. He starts by talking about the state of religious Zionism in the diaspora as of about 10 years ago, or a bit more than 10, when the talk was given, and then talks about the mitzvah of making aliyah and how that plays itself out, and the value of living in Israel. So it's an important piece. We're going to run through the beginning of it, where in his typical fashion, instead of saying, I'm a religious Zionist, therefore religious Zionism in America must be strong, he's much more honest about the reality of it, that it's much weaker than it was maybe 25 years previously, partially because Israel is now stronger, there's less urgency in supporting Israel because it's doing fairly well on its own, partially because as people see how Israeli society has actually developed, they're disillusioned in certain ways. It's not, an ideal is always better than what actually ends up happening. And aside from ideology, there are various pragmatic questions, and we'll talk about the values of making aliyah, but it's also a lot easier to stay in America because living here is so comfortable. There isn't pressure to leave America the way there is pressure to leave, let's say, Europe or various countries in the Middle East where a lot of people made aliyah. And then the core of the article talks about the values of making aliyah, which part of which is the pragmatic, that in terms of life-saving value, the state of Israel certainly served that role in a major way over the past 7 decades. But he wants to talk about deeper things. So he talks about 4 spiritual elements that relate to living in Israel, and these are going to be specifically relating to mitzvot. So first of all, you have the Ramban. This Ramban, everyone, if you've ever been to a Bnei Akiva camp, you'll probably have heard many divrei Torah about this Ramban. I'm not sure that's fully productive when you keep drumming it into people's heads, but everyone likes talking about this Ramban, that there's an obligation to live in Israel. Actually, as Aaron points out here, the obligation, the primary part of that obligation is to settle the land, to build a country. And secondarily, there's part of that is you fulfill that by moving there too. But the main goal is building the country more than just happening to live there. A second factor, there's the Gemara in Sota that talks about how there are certain mitzvahs, atlius ba'aretz, certain land-dependent mitzvahs that a person can only fulfill in Israel. In fact, this is why Moshe, towards the end of his life, we're actually at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshchanan, he says, I really want to enter the land. He keeps asking for it. He keeps being told, no. Why did Moshe want to enter the land? In order to fulfill the mitzvahs that you can only do there. So there's an added value in that, and Truma and Maser and those sorts of things. A third factor, and this is also said by the Ramban, and it's a bit of an extreme position. The Ramban has this formulation where he says that all the mitzvahs that one does outside of Israel are just for practice, so to speak. There's no real inherent value, at least if you take him at his word, there's no inherent value in keeping mitzvahs outside of Israel. Really, it's practice for when you enter Israel. So on that level, like the whole Torah is sort of a shadow of itself outside the land of Israel. Rav Aaron says it's hard to accept that, but in a milder version, there may be some truth to the Ramban. In the context of living in Israel, there's much greater significance to fulfilling mitzvahs than within the context of living outside of the land. Somehow the qualitative level is increased in that way. And then, fourth of all, there's this specific imminence, particular imminence of God in the land of Israel. That God's eyes, so to speak, are looking at the land of Israel more so than elsewhere. So that gives 4 halachically connected reasons. The last one maybe a bit less so. But there may be a specific mitzvah to move there. There are particular mitzvahs that you can only do there. Even the whole Torah may be better fulfilled there. And you're sort of closer to God, as it were, when you live in Israel. And then Rav Lichtenstein points to several additional factors that relate to, I guess, Jewish history, in a sense, that are also relevant. And 2 of them are, uses the spatial metaphor, the vertical and the horizontal axis. If you live in Israel, you're connecting vertically throughout Jewish history. People have lived in Israel throughout the centuries, I guess starting from Avram, and you're connecting, you're part of that. You're living in that same space. So that you're connecting vertically, at the same time you're connecting horizontally. That the broad range of Jews who live in Israel, you're in the same society as them, rather than being neighbors with, you know, whatever communities live in Washington Heights. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there's some additional value to being neighbors with, you know, the vast panoply of Jews throughout, you know, of all sorts of cultures and traditions who moved to Israel and live together there. It's not just that there's a range of them, but that you're living within Klal Yisrael. That's your primary society. And then he adds what he calls a narrowly Zionist dimension near the middle of page 3, where there's a sort of definition of, or partial definition of Zionism, where Rav Lichtenstein points to a theological issue. The division of the historical drama between providential control and human initiative. Right? Part of the question of Zionism is how much do things like bringing Mashiach, how much does that fall into human hands versus into God's hands? How much can we, as people, act to speed up that process? So, on that issue, obviously the Zionists, especially religious Zionists, believe that, you know, religious action can certainly lead to moving things forward, and that's why there's a certain scope of activism that's allowed for, which involves living to Israel, building the country, making sure the country is fully moral, and that's part of what it means to be a Zionist, and that's an additional reason to move to Israel and help in building that society. There's all sorts of spiritual ramifications to living in Israel, and it's hard, you know, there's a challenge of making that decision. It's not easy for everyone, even if, you know, I think Rav Lichtenstein is very clear that he thinks that there's a very, very good reason to make Aliyah. I don't think he hid that from people. But he also, in this article, he also says that it's a difficult decision to make, and there are countervailing concerns as well. Quotes the Trumas Hadeshen that every person has to estimate, you know, where they'll be best spiritually. Beyond the spiritual question, there's also material issues at work, right? This includes quality of life, although Rav Lichtenstein rejects that as, you know, not the most important factor. He calls that the flesh pots of Egypt, the Be'achleinu al-Sir al-Basar, right? We want to go back to Egypt because the food was better there. We don't want to go through the desert to Israel. That's a complaint to the Jews in the desert. So he sort of invokes that. But he says there are other factors too. It's not just that people wish for the quality of life of New York area suburbs and therefore don't make Aliyah. There are other considerations as well, including vocational self-fulfillment and Yeshua Shalom. You feel like you can be more productive in your job, and there's some inherent value to that. Concerns about the educational climate in Israel in various ways. Maybe it doesn't have the proper niche of people committed to Torah, but also believe in getting jobs that you're looking for. Maybe you're nervous about radical ideologies within religious Zionism. So he mentions all of these. And then there's personal issues. Not everyone likes being an immigrant. It's not easy to be Amerikai in Israel. You're always trying to fit in. You're not quite at home in that culture. It creates a gap between parents and children. And for people of a certain age, leaving your family, leaving your parents behind in America is difficult. And this, I think, is partially from experience, because when the Lichtensteins moved to Israel in 1971, they were leaving behind both Rav Aaron's parents and Toa's father and the Rav in America. Rav Aaron's parents ended up moving to Israel at some point later, whereas obviously the Rav didn't. In fact, the story goes the Rav was very upset with them about that decision, and there was some tension that I think we actually saw the Rav Aaron's autobiographical article where he says that later on the Rav understood why they did it. He saw his grandchildren and how they had been educated and how they'd grown up, and he understood why that decision had been made. So there's, you know, there's a lot of reasons to move to Israel. There's some countervailing concerns, and then I think this is a very important point that you don't usually hear in these contexts, and it's less specifically about Zionism, though here it's about Zionism, but an important idea of the idea of how to deal with religious frustration or tension or dilemma. Rav Lichtenstein writes here that there are a lot of people who really want to move to Israel, but they feel like they can't, whether it's because they're tied to their parents or any of these other reasons, or people who are, let's say, religious leaders who feel they can't leave their shul. They have an obligation to the community they grew up in to try to serve it. There's a tension between various personal priorities and public priorities, or all sorts of other tensions. And he sees that a lot. And some people call that hypocritical. They say, you know, you really know you need to live in Israel, but you can't bring yourself to do it. And his response to that is interesting. I confess that in making judgments or drawing conclusions, I myself adhere to a less rigorous standard. I'm less rigorous when judging other people. For one thing, surprising as may sound to some, I do not reject all strains of hypocrisy categorically. Right? Hypocrisy isn't always so bad. As I recall, an adage Douglas Bush used to cite, that's his advisor, PhD advisor, hypocrisy is the tribute which vice pays to virtue. Right? That I guess you have some mix of vices and virtues, and you'll end up being a little hypocritical, but if you didn't have the virtue, maybe you wouldn't be hypocritical, but that's not necessarily a better thing. So at least the fact that you want to move to Israel, even if you can't pull it off for whatever reason, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And of course, there's contributions that people outside of Israel make to Jewish life. He talks about the idea of drishat Zion, of seeking Zion, seeking Israel, even if you don't live there, which ties into this idea of Zion hi doresh ein la michlal debaya drisha, which is a source for zecher lemikdash. We memorialize the mikdash, we resurrect it in our minds, as it were, because we're expected, we have this mitzvah, this command to seek it. Towards the end of this piece, he talks about how there may be competition for resources in a sense. You know, you can only have so many spiritual values. There are pulls in different directions, and that's part of the challenge. I think that what's implicit is if you were just rah rah rah, move to Israel, if that was the only religious message, that would probably be more effective than if you had a more complex set of religious messages. But as he points out, so there needs to be balance, but at the same time, you can always strive for more. And when you properly understand Drishat Zion, that commitment to Israel, it actually ties in well with additional values rather than undermining them. There's a related article, this is based on a talk he gave called An Aliyah, The Uniqueness of Living in Eretz Yisrael, that has some of the similar themes, but also broadens a few of them. So we'll quickly note that. He talks about the significance of Eretz Yisrael in a person's life as something that all Jews and certainly B'nai Torah should feel. And he has this great story when he visited Rav Huttner, it was in 1962. So he visited Rav Huttner in Israel, and Rav Huttner said, so what do you feel? How are you experiencing Israel? So Rav Lichtenstein said, it's so nice, the vital Jewish life, total community, it's all Jews living here, that's such a nice feeling. Rav Huttner said, well, you had that in Eastern Europe too, that's not so special. Rav Aaron said, well, there's a broader area of application in halacha. These are things we saw in the previous article, if you'll recall, right? The tied in with the Jewish people, halachas that apply only in Israel and not in America, and the fact that there are bate din, there are courts that handle additional areas of law. Rav Huttner said, okay, you had at least parts of that elsewhere too. And finally, he said, why don't you mention the uniqueness of being in Eretz Yisrael? Chazal said that this is a country of Moshe and Aaron didn't merit to enter, and we did. We're here. Isn't that should fill you with religious excitement. It's less these technical things that you find that the country has. It should be the very fact that you're in Israel should be what's of interest. And Rav Aaron writes, I walked out of there like a beaten dog. This, and he wants, he really felt like he had missed the point, and his Rebbe, Rav Huttner, had set him straight about the values of living in Israel, not for some technical reason, just the very, that this is like a religious goal in itself. This is something that we should strive for, just like Moshe and Aaron strive for in their day. He talks about the mitzvah of living in Israel, the position of the Ramban. These we saw in the other piece, the idea that in Israel, you live a more organic and integrated life, a sense of wholeness, right? Because this, and this, I think, is fleshed out better here than in the other piece, that it's not like you have your job in the secular world, and then you have your religious life and your home life, and each of these things have some different aspects. In Israel, it's all fully integrated. You're working with Jews, you're living in society with Jews, your kids go to, will always be in Jewish schools. That's just the nature of life in Israel. It's a lot more integrated. You feel like everything ties together much more than if you live in Chutz La'aretz. There's a Rambam who says that you need Jews to be in Israel for the holidays to actually take effect, for the months and the calendar to actually work. But, and in the context there, the Rambam says there's an assurance that there will always be a Jewish presence in Israel. So that's very nice as a promise, and the goal should be to work with that, to be a part of that. Towards the end again, he talks about this idea of striving, and we'll read, I think it's an important quote, towards the top of page 6 here. This appreciation of Eretz Yisrael might make things more difficult. If you really appreciate living in Israel, but you aren't able to do it for whatever reason, it makes things more difficult, because if you don't settle there eventually, you may have a sense of an unfulfilled dream, an unrealized aspiration, perhaps a tinge of guilt. And if you're a real Zionist your whole life, but for whatever reason you can't move there, you end up feeling like something's missing. However, for a Jew, the significance of having aspirations and dreams is critical, right? It's important in itself to have a dream, even if it's not fulfilled. We do not subscribe to the conception that it is better to have minimal aspirations so as to have maximal contentment. And this is an argument you hear sometimes, right? If you're not going to move to Israel, why be a Zionist? Why care about Israel if you're not going to move there anyway? Or sometimes you say, why should we train someone to have spiritual aspirations, aspirations of Avodas Hashem, if we know that later in life they won't have enough time to fulfill them, they'll be too busy? This argument is rejected here strongly, that of course we want people to aspire, even if there will be frustration down the line, even if they won't be able to fulfill everything. The moral life, the spiritual life, the religious life is one of yearning and aspiration. Therefore, in this case, this relationship to Eretz Yisrael is part of what a person studying here in Gush should take back with him. Is that, you want to have that yearning to live in Israel, even if you don't end up doing it. And that's, even if you end up being frustrated, it's not worth abandoning the values that you actually have. And he concludes, Aliyah is critically both on an individual and a communal level. At the very least, you should feel the draw of the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, that tied into the Dvar Torah this was part of. That idea of individual and communal level will tie in well with Rav Lichtenstein's writings on religion and state. Before we look at that, it may help to just give a bit of a framing of different views that are out there in the very, very broad framing in terms of Zionism overall. So you have people who are you have like secular Zionists, which is less common than it once was, but people who believed in building the state didn't think religion had a particularly important role. That was like Herzl and that whole school. And you have Haredim on the opposite extreme, people who believe in the religious existence. And the fact that the state is secular means it's basically illegitimate, and you should live in Eretz Yisrael, but not in Medinat Yisrael, and that's the value of living there. And then in the middle, you have the religious Zionists. And there's different versions of religious Zionism. I think Rav Lichtenstein did not adopt the mainstream, so to speak, the mainstream one you find in Israel. Generally in Israel, there's two pieces that are very much emphasized. One of them is that of messianism, and as you probably know, the tefillah for the Medina has Reshit Tzmichat Gulatenu, that the land of Israel is seen as the beginning of the flowering of the redemption, and somehow that building a state leads to Mashiach, and that ties into what Rav Aram mentioned about having spiritual activism, that being a legitimate move, and that not just being in God's hands to bring Mashiach, but people can affect it as well. But I think the standard religious Zionist approach is one that takes that to a certain extreme. There's a lot, the state is the beginning of the Messiah. When the disengagement happened, that was the impetus for this Orthodox Forum. That was a real step backwards. We should always be expanding territory and growing and building towards a messianic end, and giving back territory is a step backwards and undermines all that. That's one major theme of religious Zionism. And another one is seeing the state, not just the fact that the state is a step towards a messianic process, but seeing the state as requiring that we find a way to make it as religious as possible. If the Haredim say the state is illegitimate because it's not religious, the Atilumi say we need to find a way to insert religion as much as possible and somehow make it fit. And this next essay, Religion and State, The Case for Interaction, which was published in 1970, so before Rav Aaron made Aliyah, but well after the State of Israel was founded, obviously, talks about this question about whether religion and state can be integrated, and it was published in, what I understand, is a secular Jewish publication, so not within a religious Jewish publication. And the question is, can religion and state interact? Rav Lichtenstein starts off by talking about how you need to give a religious framework for it, which I think is mostly just for the secular audience, to sort of show where he's coming from. Man, he gives four principles. Man's created by God as a spiritual being who's a responsible moral and religious agent, and therefore religious fulfillment is based on adhering to God and following the Torah, and society is based on that on a more collective scale. And God has an ongoing dialectical encounter with humanity, and part of that is the covenant with Israel. So that basically is a very general point about viewing the value of religion and explaining that to people who are not necessarily committed to that. But then he says that's one set of principles. And then you have the principles of personal liberty, which we appreciate as Western people, which we certainly as Americans are happy to have, right? That there's no religious coercion. And the question is whether they can work together. Now, if you're a secularist, it's fairly easy to think about these questions. You can either take a personal perspective or an individual perspective or a communal perspective. And either one, you know, whether you're more of a libertarian or a communitarian, that's an important question, but you can take one side or the other. You can say everything's really about an individual's rights, or you can say everything's really about the common good. Whereas if you're a religious thinker, you have to be committed to both, because both are related to one another, and both are what we expect. We expect not just that individual Jews keep the Torah, but that there should be a Torah society. Those are very important principles, and you can't give up on either of them. So you need to be concerned both with, it's not libertarianism, but I guess the individual's pursuit of God and the communal pursuit of God. And you need to take both of those into account. Now, when you get to the question of religion and state, that makes things even more complicated. And in theory, it can work. So as he writes, the interaction of religion and state is theologically not only possible, but desirable. On the other hand, practically, it's extremely difficult. And the dangers are really on two different sides. Because if your goal is to maximally preserve both religious values and moral freedom, combining religion and state threatens Judaism on the one hand and the Jew on the other hand. The state might impose its own authority and values upon religion, and as that's on the one hand, right? That the Jewish community, Judaism may be challenged. The state imposes on it in various ways, and additionally, for the individual, if let's say the state institutes religion, so the individual isn't keeping it out of a sense of religious commitment as much as out of a sense that just that's what society does or that's what's legally obligatory. So there's really multiple challenges here. As he writes, the secular prescription would avert some diseases, but kill the patient. It would preserve Jewish civil liberties, but destroy Jewry. Right? Because if you say there's no, if you come down hard and say that there's no, that there, you know, you can't, you sort of cut religion out, then it's a lot more difficult to function there. And the Jewish nation is a nation by virtue of the Torah. At the same time, there may be possibilities of institutionalizing certain laws, like maybe the marriage laws or the kashrus laws for some general sense of religious identity, but you're going to have a hard time creating in practice a state that's a religious state that also allows for freedom. You're going to have to sacrifice something, whether you're not going to end up having religious freedom. I think that's something that definitely the readers of this didn't want. Whether you're not going to end up having institutionalized religion and have it totally secularized, that's something Ravaram says would destroy the state. So he says the best thing you can do is try to have some sort of compromise, have some general values of the state, some general Jewish values integrated into the state, but you can't really define the state in that way. And what he's doing here, I think, is he's paving a middle road between the people who say, in some ways he's agreeing with the Haredim in saying that a true Jewish state has to really work as Jewish values and with halacha, although he sort of concedes that would be impossible. Whereas, at least in theory, Haredim say, we think it's possible, just give us if you just let us do it, we'd set up our state with based on halacha. I think Rav Aaron realizes that wouldn't work. And similarly, the opposite, a fully secular state wouldn't work, and the best is to try to find some middle road. This is different, though, than the religious Zionist mainstream, at least historically. Now I think things have complicated themselves. But definitely in 1970, the Maftal was a partner in all the government coalitions, and their goal was to try to take society and make it conform with halachic Judaism as well as you can. The idea was, this was like the perfect ideal, was to have state and religion interact and work together. That was the greatest ideal that could be pursued. And there's a messianic idea here, right? This will lead towards Mashiach if Israeli society is at least minimally religious. Rav Lichtenstein doesn't really buy that. He sees that that's, you know, institutionalized religion too much, then you end up with people who don't care, and let alone the fact that you lose the freedom. And you also end up sacrificing Judaism, because, you know, the amount of halachic Judaism actually integrated into society is minimal, and you shouldn't see it as if you've really created that. So I think here you see this, the idea that the focus on the state as having this ability to be perfect and to integrate everything and to fit everything together, that your average Dati Lumi thinker has, Rav Lichtenstein rejects it. He's a lot more pragmatic about the state. And that ties in, I think, with the idea that his view about the state in the relation to Mashiach is a lot more limited. There's no inexorable path forward that because there's a state, there will be Mashiach soon, and we need to form the perfect society and do it. Obviously, we want to form as good a society as we can. We want to work in that direction. But it's not, there's no guarantee that this will lead to all of the messianic goals that we have in mind in any immediate way. You do what you can, and God does God's part, and whatever happens, happens. But it's not this path forward that we've now entered with the state that Messiah is near. In that sense, he follows largely what the Rav's position was, also to see the state of Israel as divinely based and the real opportunity, but not necessarily to view it as the beginning of some immediate messianic process. He follows that, but at the same time, he ended up moving to Israel. He sees a lot more values in the pragmatic sense, right? If you think back to the article we just saw about the diaspora religious Zionism and why to make Aliyah, it doesn't say to hasten the messianic coming. It maybe makes an indirect reference to Mashiach in passing, defining religious Zionism, but that's not the main goal. The main goal is we should live in Israel. There's more mitzvahs there. There may be a mitzvah to live in Israel. You're part of a Jewish society. You're part of building Jewish society. All of these things are various factors, but it's not like if you ask your average Dati Lumi thinker, they'd say, what do you mean? You're going to bring Mashiach? Of course you have to move to Israel. It's a lot more nuanced than that, a lot more complex than that, and it's not that single one approach. So that's Rav Aaron on this topic. As usual, complex, not necessarily taking the mainstream approach, although at the end of the day, very strong proponent of Zionism and of Aliyah.